Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 27 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action movie Die Hard, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is DJ Valentine of the Simplistic Review Podcast. Welcome back to the show, DJ.
Thanks for having me back on to talk about a movie I love so very, very much. I don't know why I cry. I'm crying. I'm getting emotional. I love it so much.
Don't cry too much. Don't cry too much.
I'm sorry. I'm bringing it on. I'm sorry.
don't cry for me, Argentina. So
Argentina.
Hey, there you go. Don't cry for me, Nakatomi.
Don't cry for me, Nakatomi. I will not be on the Evita podcast. I apologize, but I have no desire to ever watch that movie.
I saw it once or twice, so, but don't worry. It's not high on my list, so you don't have to worry about that one.
It's low on the totem pole of
yes. Yeah. So minute 27 begins with Hans looking at a cowering Ellis and ends with Hans whistling while he works. So yesterday we were talking about the fact that Hans was beginning to go over Takagi's dossier. And we got cut off by him saying University of California. So why don't you continue from there, Hans / DJ?
1955, law degree, Stanford, 1962. MBA, Harvard, 1970. President, Nakatomi Trading, Nakatomi Investment Group.
Ah, you skipped the vice chairman.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. It's very small. Vice chairman, Nakatomi Investment Group.
Enough.
And father of five.
I am Takagi.
How do you do? It's a pleasure to meet you.
I mean,
my favorite part of this is and father of five, which essentially just gives you how much the stakes of this right there, where he's doing the snake lion through the prey thing. And then when he mentions his children, it's like he almost looks gleeful, like, ah.
I have right, but there's also the whole idea that I was thinking about is that why, you know, does Takagi know that that was the next thing on his dossier?
Maybe. You know, maybe.
Normally, if you're going through a dossier, you're going to say all the different things someone does. Like, why would you mention, okay, and, you know, father of five. Okay, but what about, what's his wife's name? His wife's name is Joyce. I mean, I don't know. You know, it's like.
Right. See, the thing about it is I think Takagi just wants as we talked about his backstory earlier, he ain't afraid of nothing. He's been right. In an internment camp. He's not afraid of nothing. And this guy is threatening people he cares about, and he doesn't want to be known as the cowering, you know, person in the corner, because Holly right. is kind of holding him back. And I think he has enough of it. But Hans glee in reading and saying that line. Every time I watch the scene, I always go mouth it to myself. And father of five, it's just so because he's like, it just shows at that moment Hans doesn't give a damn about this guy's family.
Nothing.
He will kill him indiscriminately. The fact that he's a father probably helps him in the situation in his negotiation, part where he's at. So that I always I love. And it makes Takagi look heroic. The movie could have been about Takagi. He's so heroic. Right. If they went a different way, this whole movie could have been about the cat and mouse between Takagi and Hans. But it's just a good scene. It's a good scene.
Yeah, it's a great scene. The way that they play this all out, for sure. Now, I mean, I did a little bit of the math. So since Takagi was born in 1937, so he finished university at the age of 18.
Yeah,
which already says something about him. I mean, here he's, you know, he's very intellectual and able by the time he's 18 to finish college, you know, at the University of California, and then. Yeah, and he was on a scholarship. So therefore, you know, let's say he was 16 when he went in, or maybe 15. You know, that or they just got the math wrong. You know, it's one or the other.
Either way.
then you know, he finished Stanford with an MBA at the age of 25.
Right.
And he finished, sorry, he finished his law degree in Stanford at the age of 25. And then he finished his MBA at Harvard when he was 33.
Right.
So, I
He's
mean,
smart.
again, he's very
He's
smart.
smart.
He's very accomplished. No question
This
about
is the
that.
guy. This is the guy that Hans wanted to match with wits with, and I think to a point he. We'll get into the elevator scene next episode, but I think he admires him a little bit because as we've just if he knows his bona fides, he knows that Takagi is not some spoiled rich kid.
Right.
He's rich because he took the long way around.
Yes.
Hans going for the short way around, but I think he admires this guy. He's like, well, this guy, one, is probably as smart as me, and two, he ain't no punk. He's not gonna be. I have to come with it to get him to do what I want.
Yes, for
In this
sure.
situation,
Okay, so what do you know about Stanford University?
Stanford.
Yes.
I know Andrew Luck, quarterback there. I know the guy Bill Walsh, coach there. He kind of made up the West Coast offense. Mostly, it's all sports stuff. They know
Right.
their mascot was a tree for some point.
Do you know what the university's name, who the university is named after?
Stanford. No, who was the name after?
Okay, so it was, first of all, it is it was created in Stanford, California, which is really
Right.
funny. It's near Palo Alto.
All
Okay,
right.
the campus is one of the largest campuses, university campuses in the United States. It's 8,180 acres, and they have over 17,000 students. It's ranked among the top universities in the world. So it was
Right.
founded in 1885 by Leland and Jane Stanford in memory of their son, Leland Stanford Jr., who died of typhoid at the age of 15 the year beforehand. Stanford himself was a U.S. senator and was a former governor of California, who became a railroad tycoon, and the rest is history from there. Okay. The after he died in 1893, the school, the university struggled a little bit financially, and then once again in 1906, after the San Francisco earthquake, they had problems. But what they ended up doing was is they tried convincing their students to start companies, to build industry, and it's right next to the Silicon Valley, so. Right next to what became Silicon Valley. So obviously, in the 20s and 30s, they were getting their students to start all these little businesses, and they just did an amazing job of it. As of this year, they have won 131 NCAA team championships.
That's I remember.
That's just amazing. It's
Yeah,
more than
yeah.
any university, okay? And they have won 296 Olympic medals, including 150 gold and 79 silver medals, obviously students and alumni, right? There have been 85 Nobel laureates from Stanford, 29 Turing Awards laureates, 8 field medalists. Okay, there are based on all the companies that alumni have founded. They have produced more than $2.7 trillion in annual revenue. And they were able to create 5.4 million jobs. And it's basically the equivalent of the seventh largest economy in the world, based on
My
all the
God.
money that they've garnered from that. There was one president who was a graduate of Stanford. That was Herbert Hoover. There are 74 living billionaires and 17 astronauts. Sorry,
I know Elon
70.
was it.
How many billionaires did I say? 74 living
74. Isn't
billionaires.
Elon Musk one of them? Didn't Musk
I
go
don't know.
to.
I didn't look at the list of 74 million billionaires, and there are 17 astronauts that graduated from Stanford.
I know a couple of the alumni. I know Tiger went there, Tiger Woods.
Right.
I know Reese Witherspoon dropped out of there. Somebody else. It comes up a lot because I watch a lot of sports. And you watch these college football games, and they'll be like, sometimes they'll do like a pick 'em, and they'll have famous alums pick the games or whatever. So every time they go to Stanford, you'll see one of these celebrities come up there, and it'll be like, you know, Tiger or whatever, Reese. I think Jennifer Connelly might have went there. The alumni is deep, put it that way.
Yes, for sure. Now, what's really amazing, and this surprised me, and I'm sure it's going to surprise you too, that according to Forbes, Stanford has produced the second highest number of billionaires of all universities. It's the second highest. We just said there were 74 living billionaires, and it's only the second highest. What do you think would have been the first?
Harvard, I would assume.
Yes, which is the next thing we're going to talk about, because, you know, Takagi graduated from Harvard at the age of 33.
Okay.
So Harvard is a private Ivy League research university in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Do you know when it was founded? Any clue?
Way before my time.
Way before everyone is listening. Put them all together. And it's poor. How many?
100?
No, it's almost 400 years old. It was founded in 1636.
Yeah, it's a long time ago.
Yeah, so in another 14 years, it'll be 400 years since it was founded. That's just amazing. By the Puritan clergyman John Harvard, it is the oldest institute of higher learning in the United States and still remains among the most prestigious in the world. Okay, they have a library there that is the largest academic library in the world. They have 79 different libraries that hold 20.4 million items. Yeah, seriously.
That's a lot.
There are 8 U.S. presidents who have graduated from Harvard. There are 188 living billionaires. Because remember,
a ton of celebrities, by the way.
That's right. But we said before that there were 74 billionaires in Stanford. They have 188. Think about that. That's like two and a half times the amount. Almost two and a third amount, whatever.
Do you know some of the celebrity alumni? Because one of them we mentioned.
Well, I know one of them. Everyone we know that Natalie Portman is a famous.
Yeah, because of the social network, that kind of was a big deal.
Yes.
But one of them we mentioned last episode. Can you remember who we mentioned last episode?
Who is a
graduate from Harvard? We mentioned this person.
We mentioned someone. Well, it wasn't John Candy, and it wasn't Steve Martin.
It wasn't them. I have to look. I don't know. Maybe John Candy went to Harvard. No,
I don't think so. I don't think either of them did. Wow, we mentioned it last episode.
Yes.
And it wasn't Scrooge McDuck, right?
And I know this off the top of my head. Off the top of my head, I know. Wasn't Scrooge McDuck. No, he's not.
Wasn't Scrooge McDuck. Okay. So give me a little bit of a hint. You know,
he was on my top 5 list of favorite diehard clone movies.
Oh, you're talking about yesterday. I thought you were talking about the last time we were on Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Right. Last.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm trying to think back months, and you want me to just think about yesterday.
Sorry, I apologize.
That's fine. No problem. It's a perfectly understandable misunderstanding. Okay, so it wasn't Keanu Reeves.
You don't know that. You don't know that.
No, I'm trying to, you know, I'm thinking this out.
He's from California. He'd have gone to Stanford if he went anywhere.
Okay, that's true. It wasn't Keanu Reeves. It probably wasn't Dennis Hopper. All right. It was definitely not Sylvester Stallone.
We don't know that.
Maybe John Lithgow. All right, I'm going to put him on the side for
John.
Now. Oh, wait, come on. I'm going through it. And you already, all right.
You got it on the third try. Not John Lithgow. John Lithgow was
I was just going through the movies, you know. And I was going to say, it wasn't Steven Seagal, that's for sure. Wait a second. Wasn't it Tommy Lee Jones?
Tommy Lee Jones also went to Harvard.
He and Al Gore were roommates at Harvard, weren't they? Or was it Yale?
I think it was. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Al Gore. I'm pretty sure it was them. Yeah.
Right.
I think I came up during the election back in the day.
It could be. All right. Well, they had Tommy Lee Jones, you know, announced Al Gore's, nomination as president back in.
Right.
Or nomination on the Democratic ticket back then. Right. Mm-hmm. So what else? The alumni have won 10 Academy Awards.
That's great. Okay. One of them, Tommy Lee Jones. One of them, Natalie Portman.
There we go. Two of them there.
One of them, Matt Damon. I think Matt Damon went to Harvard.
Have it.
I think Mira Sorvino.
You got to go pack the car.
I'm trying to remember all the ones that I know went to Harvard. Mira Sorvino, Conan O'Brien, he didn't get an Oscar. I'm missing a couple, but yeah, those are the ones I can remember.
Right. Now, the link they had here, if I clicked on the Academy Awards, goes to the Academy Awards. It doesn't go to the list of them. So that didn't help, you know. That's the problem with Wikipedia. You know, you click on words that are highlighted and it takes you to the real event. It doesn't take you to you're specifically looking for there. They've gotten 48 Pulitzer Prizes and 110 Olympic medals, which include 46 gold, which actually means that Stanford has more Olympic medals. Wait, 150? Wow. Yeah. Stanford has 150 Olympic medals. And how many of them were gold? Stanford has 296 Olympic medals, 150 gold. Stanford blows Harvard completely out of the water on this one when it comes to Olympic medals. But I think there are other places where they sort of are a little better.
They win in other ways.
You know, like the Nobel laureates and stuff like that, you know.
Right.
There are a few more from Harvard. Just a few more. Mm. You know, but yeah. That's pretty amazing. Now, there are a few movies that they allowed to film in Harvard itself. And they actually, because of controversies, they stopped allowing movies to film there. Do you know what? Can you think of? I have a list here of three movies that were filmed there.
I don't know if Social Network got allowed to film there.
I don't think so.
No, so I would not know.
Okay, so the first one is Love Story.
Oh, of course.
From 1970. Okay.
Right.
Okay, but that was the movie that caused a lot of damage to Harvard. You know, that
all the things you would think would cause damage to Harvard, Love Story is the one that did it.
Seriously,
Bob Evans not happy that Rob Evans not happy that. Right. That
then you have The Paper Chase, which they allowed to be filmed there, which is a really fun movie. Mm-hmm. If you've ever seen that, about law students trying.
Is that
to,
Jack Lemmon?
No.
That Paper Chase.
It's with John Houseman. John Houseman won an Oscar for it.
Okay.
And then a movie that I've never heard of called The Small Circle of Friends. So basically, the Harvard's policy since 1970 has been to permit filming on its property only rarely. So most scenes set at Harvard, especially indoor shots, but especially aerial footage and shots of public areas such as Harvard Square, are in fact shot elsewhere.
It's like the CIA building in every movie the last time they use aerial footage of the CIA building is
right
from like 30 years ago to just keep color grading it to make it seem like it's more new.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, one of the things we glossed over because it happened at the end of yesterday's minute and the beginning of this minute is Ellis. Okay.
Right.
Now, we all know Ellis is stoned. You know, he missed the spot. And, you know, he's still, you know, you see that he's just completely paranoid and freaking out by everything that's going on here. So
the last thing you want to do when there's a hijacking or anything is a line of blow. because you're already amped up, and now all of a sudden there's guys with automatic weapons firing them in the air. That's the last thing you want to be. If he was on like weed or something, like a downer, he might be a little bit more chill. But because he's so amped up, this is the worst.
I agree, but part of the problem is it's not something you can anticipate.
No, you know, he wasn't thinking that far ahead.
It's like should I take this line or shouldn't I?
I don't know if a bunch of terrorists are going to pop.
Are there
going to
be terrorists? Exactly.
You always got to know where your terrorists are before you do your cocaine. Okay,
completely.
that's the rule.
Completely. And I mean, I love the way that. You know, he's just like looking around completely paranoid about what's going on. And, you know, we get a scene where Hans takes a look at him while he's walking through everyone. And he looks at him and he's not, I wouldn't say he's disgusted, but he looks like he's just about to start laughing that there's no way that this is Takagi. Yeah. I don't think so. I'm going to keep moving, you know, next, you know, going forward, moving along.
He's Moving looking on. For his equal. Hans is looking for his equal. So he rests eyes on Ellis. He's like, no.
Well, as we find out later, Ellis thinks that he's He's actually, yes. He doesn't even think he's Hans's equal. He thinks he's above him. Yeah, he thinks he's better than him. But we know who gets to win that one.
Right.
Right. And then after, you know, he cordially introduces himself to Takagi. So Carl just like pushes Takagi away very forcefully. You know, this is all done very cordially and stuff like that. And you see Carl walking around with him also. They're looking around. They're looking at all these different executives. Okay, who's Takagi? Who's not? Who's this? And then they find out Takagi is like, oh, nice to meet you. And then let's push you out of the way. Let's push you to where we need you to go.
Right.
And then the scene cuts and we finally get to see John McClane again. You know, we see him, you know, coming out of a stairwell. And he's looking onto the floor that he's on, and there's this really strange sign on the wall there. So first of all, you see that there's a name board, which you can't make out any of the names, you know, which we later on will find the name of Bill Clay on there, you know,
Bill Clay,
exactly, in a completely different area, I assume, of the building.
Right.
But below that, there's this. What looks like an electrical board or something like that, electricity board or something like that. And it says some strange things on it. It says ETA, circuit breaker protocol reset. And then it says procedures. And then you have A, B, C, and D, but they're all blank. So I guess the production manager forgot to fill in those little details along the way.
That decorator was like, oh, I'm tired, man.
Nobody's going to be looking at this, you know.
I just did Holly's office. Leave me a break.
Yeah, it's like, but it's really funny. I mean, it does flash by within a second. So, you know, no one expects anybody to actually, you know, do a minute-by-minute podcast on this. But still, yeah, you know.
30 years in the future. They don't.
That's right. For all those wannabe set directors and you know, remember that when you're doing things, somebody might be looking at your movie somebody at some point.
Details matter. Yeah.
Yeah. I would love to be able to read some of the names on that board because I'm assuming that some of them are jokes. You know.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. But here it says Federley, Fannin, Gefeller, Gordon, Kaitling, Leonard. Langra? It's hard to read what exactly
it says. It's kind of like a, what's the word? I say a fetish, but a thing that we when I was in film school with one of my co-hosts on the Simplistic Reviews podcast, Justin Palizzi, we did a short film and we had a scene in an office. It was a dean's office and we had to put a whole bunch of stuff and they were just putting paper in there and I was like, nope, give me a day. And all the paper in the office is written by me and or him, me or Justin. And it's all this information that's never on camera. It's just never shot. We had like it was like a file on a student and we're just making up stuff, all these little details, just in case the camera caught a glimpse of it and we watched the movie back. Never was on camera.
Just in case somebody one day wants to do a movies by minute podcast.
Minute by minute podcast. Yeah, we always like, it was like all the posters in the room. We were like, we'll make up bands and we'll, just in case for a half a second it gets shot and we see it and they're like, oh, okay, that's a little. So there's little details like that sometimes. And some movies do it a lot. I mean, I know Edgar Wright is very good with doing that where everything is, the little details are everywhere throughout his movie.
Right. And then the shot pans and we get to see the, you know, the to the other side of the, it goes to the other side of the room and the music changes a little bit. It gets like a little more suspenseful, thrilling, stuff like that. We see like a desk that has a little white Christmas tree on it, which, you know, if that was my desk, there's no room to actually do work on the desk because that Christmas tree is so big.
It's the holidays.
Yeah,
come on.
Exactly, but so you think you don't have to work?
No, of course. It's the season of miracles. So be of good cheer.
Yeah,
come on.
And you know, John just takes a quick glance into this computer room, and then the next thing we see him is back in the stairwell. We find out that this is floor 33, and then he continues up the flight of stairs. You know, and what's great is as he's walking up the stairs. We hear him reminding himself what is there. He goes, computers, 32, construction, 33.
Getting the lay of the land, just in case.
Exactly. No, but it's also for us. It's also to let the viewer know a little bit about what's going on these floors and stuff like that. And then the shot changes and we go back into the elevator and we get a great close-up shot of Takagi's face. He's trying to figure out what's going on here. We can see Tony behind him holding his gun forcefully up in the air. And then we see on the other side, it moves over and we see Carl, whose hair is blowing like he's in the middle of
How dare you make fun of Carl's magnificent locks?
I'm not making fun of them. What I'm saying is he's in an elevator. Where is the wind coming from?
It's just his aura. His aura is blowing his hair back.
It could be. And then we get Hans who starts to whistle. He whistles a Christmas tune.
Now technically he's not whistling. He's going.
He's humming. He's humming. Yeah.
Singing Ode to Joy.
Yes.
To himself. But yeah. I always get into arguments. I don't know if you've discussed this yet or you're going to discuss in the future about this being a Christmas movie or not. And I yell at anybody who tells me it's not, because every ounce of this movie shoves Christmas in your face as many times as possible. So I don't know what they're talking about when they say it's not a Christmas. He could be singing anything, but he's singing Ode to Joy. Why is he singing Ode to Joy?
Because it's Christmas Eve. That's why.
It's Christmas Eve.
Yes. Right.
Sorry, so I'm going on a tangent. I can go on a tangent about this being a Christmas movie or not.
That's right. We'll get there. We'll get there. We'll get there. I warned you about that. We'll get there. So you have anything else you want to say about this minute before we get into the script?
The only thing I would say, yes, is this is we're talking about yesterday about how Hans keeps flipping his perception of himself. Now he's going to do it again, right? Probably, definitely at the end of the next, at the end of this elevator scene we're talking about tomorrow. But yeah, he keeps flipping it back and forth, and now he thinks he's found his opponent for this whole thing.
Yes.
And Takagi, I think, as hard as a man as he is, as friendly as he is, but as strong-willed as a man he is, he also makes this. And people give Ellis a lot of crap. Takagi makes the same exact mistake Ellis makes in this movie.
Yeah.
And I will get into that later, but that is the exact same mistake, and we'll get into it later.
Which is why, well, we won't, because you won't be here next week when we really get into that, but yeah.
Oh, right.
Well, you know.
But I'll hint around it. I'll dance around the mistake.
There you go. So the script has some nice descriptions here. Remember, we mentioned yesterday that the whole bio doesn't appear, but at this point, after Takagi it's mentioned to Hans who Takagi is. So it says Hans steps towards him, extends a hand, and then says quite civilly, "Mr. Takagi, how do you do? My name is Hans Gruber." And then it says, "Takagi is confused by his charm. Hans waves politely in the direction of an elevator and with an armed escort takes the executive away. Camera adjusts to show Holly concerned." And then we see the 33rd floor. And it says, "McLean pauses outside the stairwell door to the 33rd floor. He presses the handle and cracks the door open to reveal a computer floor. The computer machinery drones on under the lights behind plate glass windows. McLean quietly closes the door and moves to another floor. McLean mumbles to himself, 32 construction, 33 computers. And then back into the service elevator, Hans, Takagi, Carl, and Tony riding silently. Hans alone seems relaxed. He whistles. We recognize it as a snatch of Wagner.
That how do you do is the diffusion. Yes. He always goes very father of five, like he's drooling, and then he goes, "How do you do?" Like he just turns it off, right back to charming, and then he'll get very, very menacing again. He keeps flipping it where he goes, "It's a pleasure to meet you." Where he's like, now he sounds like the snake in Jungle Book, where he's just gonna bite your head off, but the how do you do just completely shuts off the tension. I think the score stops when he says it too, where the score is like getting really, Michael Kamen's score is getting really big, and then it goes, how do you do? And it stops. it's so good. Rickman is fantastic in this movie, but yes, that's one of my favorite parts.
For sure. So every Tuesday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track Holiday Edition. So DJ, you got a nice holiday story about something that happened to you, an adventure, misadventure, you know, that happened around the holidays. It could be any type of holiday.
Yeah. We used to live in a cul-de-sac back when I was in high school, and on the 4th of July, we were firing off, let's just call them not legal fireworks, with a metal pipe, and my cousin's aim got a little off, and one of the fireworks hit the roof of a neighbor's house, and it didn't light it aflame, but it singed it pretty bad. Needless to say, we like ran the house and hid, and we're just waiting for the neighbor to just come and get us and call the police on us. But luckily for us, they were out of town that weekend and came back to find the roof has a big, look like a black skid mark across the roof. And they because of where we lived, the park, there was a park maybe a 2.5 minute walk away that was actually setting off legal fireworks. And the neighbor assumed it was from them and sued the city.
Oh, wow.
For the damage to their roof, never knowing that it was us.
Until they listened to a podcast years later.
A podcast,
and they're like, oh, crap, it was DJ.
It's okay. You'll never know what city it was. Never know.
Yeah, but it was those people living in the cul-de-sac. There you go.
Yes, the cul-de-sac neighborhood, yes.
Exactly. All right, great. So thank you for that story. That was a good one. So DJ, you want to once again tell people how they can get in touch with you?
I'm on Twitter as under Trying to Be DJV. You can search Simplistic Reviews Podcast, the show I am one of the three hosts of. Search Simplistic Reviews on YouTube, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, the dark web, we're everywhere. And we listen to us make fun of movies and TV and do
and
silly little sketches and Die Hard. Where me and my friend Matt, who looks exactly like Ellis, he dressed like Ellis for Halloween.
Did he really? Wow.
We did a sketch where it was I was Hans, and Justin, he does a pretty good Bruce Willis, and I had Matt do Ellis, and we did a sketch where we're just talking about our show, but we're doing it in the interrogation of Ellis radio scene. And it was like great because I was like, man, you look, nobody can see this, but you look exactly like Ellis. you have the beard. You have everything. You're perfect. But yeah, that's our show. We make fun of Die Hard all the time because I am just one third of a podcast where all three of us know Die Hard backwards and forwards. Like, I don't really need to know. When you told me to come on the show to talk Die Hard, I was like, okay, should I write notes? Not really. I know this movie so well. I got it back right in my brain, right in the old kebab up here. So yeah.
All right. Excellent. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcast you might be using to listen to this show. You can find me very simply just by doing a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on my website. You can find me on Twitter, and you can find me on Facebook. So DJ, you feel like coming back again tomorrow?
I'll be there.
Or be square. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.